Hello, this is Tom Campbell, host of a series of interviews with local musicians and music industry professionals. The following interview picks up from the Dick Tracy interview with John Richardson and Brad Grapp, talking about the recording project Big City, featuring Mark Gallagher. John, tell us a little bit about the history of Mark Gallagher.
Well, he started out in Chicago, and he played a bunch of teen club bands out there, the Morticians, the Saints, the Troys. And then he auditioned for the Litter in 68, I think. I had met him in 69 when they were playing the New City Opera House. Just admired his voice. I mean, he was the most incredible thing. I was just virtually stunned that somebody that good was playing locally, you know. After that, he was in a group called Hot Setup out of Chicago, because he quit the Litter for a little while, and that was with a couple guys from a national group called The Flock. And then he came back to the Litter, and then he joined a group called Archangel, which had originally been U.S. Pipe, with John Flomer and Bob Flomer.
What year was that?
71. I think Sean Jones had gotten him into the band. And Doug Paulson was one of the other guitar players. I don't remember the drummer's name. And they went to L.A. in 73 and then kind of broke up there because they kept on getting told they were way ahead of their time. They should wait until this thing called video comes out. And unfortunately, nobody has 5 to 7 years to kind of hang out in L.A. So when he came back, he joined the band I was in at the time with Tom Murray in 74 called Straight Up. Then I think after that, after Straight Up, he went in with Archangel again, and they were doing covers, and the most prominent musician that went through that thing was Yanni. He was in there for a while. Then he went back to Chicago, did Clone, and then he kind of came back to Minneapolis because he always liked Minneapolis because it was a really nice place, and he didn't want to tell anybody from Chicago about it. And he decided to raise a family. He got married and started to raise a family. And then I talked to him in 88 about getting a band together or doing this project. And we wrote a couple songs together. He actually finished off the lyrics on a few things. And I tried to get his input in there because it's always best when singers have a little bit of their own input on what the songs are about. And that's when we put the Big City project together.
How many songs did you actually record with Big City?
We actually recorded 13 on the CD. We only have 12. Mm-hmm.
And they're all written by?
Either myself or somebody from the band. Heat of My Heart, Chris Gilbertson had written with us.
So the main songwriters were?
Myself and then a couple other guys threw a couple songs in.
Okay.
John was really the main musical director through this stuff. He wrote most of the stuff. And there was some influences from the keyboard player, Jim Potter, and Gallagher was very specific about what lyrics he would sing and what lyrics he would not sing. He had some stuff that he wanted to bring himself. John's got a great story about one of the songs that Mark absolutely refused to sing the lyrics on. He was just such a unique individual that he would not do certain things that were unacceptable. John, why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, I had written a song. It was called Movin'. And the lyrics went something. Anyways, it referenced a woman's behind, and he would not say that. And then I would try to get him to do certain things to be a little bit more emotional. And last time, Scream Your Name in Anger, Fall to My Knees in Vain, he wanted to do it his way. He would not do it my way. So, you know, with a singer like that, you just have to let things go. You just do it whatever he feels. When he did his vocals, came in and did them all in less than 2 hours.
For the whole
13 songs. We were really well rehearsed, though. We did a lot of pre-production. I think everybody did a great job on it because it was like we were in for... We recorded all the basic tracks in like 3 hours. And then there was a major snafu where we had to come and re-record it because we forgot to put a test tone on the beginning. And one of the guys was out of tune. So.
Oh, my God. Musicians.
And then so we had to go. I had to come back and do all my solos again. And the keyboard player had to come back and do all his.
One of the great things about, you know, having the band intact at that point, not working with side players or studio players or something like that, is we had already pre-produced the stuff before we went into the studio. We kind of knew what we were going to do. So it really went very quickly with the rough basic tracks.
When you say pre-produced the stuff, what do you mean exactly?
We sat in our keyboard player's basement and worked the stuff out so that everybody knew their parts. Everybody knew the dynamics, the volumes, the little subtleties. You know, working together with the same band for so long really helps with this stuff. We knew what each other was going to do before they did it.
So you have the basic tracks down. You have to come back in and redo them. And then what happens?
Then we record the backup vocals. And then after that, Mark came in and did all his tracks in less than 2 hours. Because he was really a pro. And most singers, you have to stop it and go, let's start again. And
so you had the 13 songs finished up by what point in time?
Probably had like 20 hours or less in it mm-hmm. at that point.
And when are you finished up as far as the month and year?
This is... probably summer of 89. Actually, what took the most time was to actually mix it. I produced it, I guess. I didn't remember that hardly, but I did now that I remember it. Brad helped me. Denny helped me. Tom Baden came back and helped us mm-hmm. doing a little things here and there. That took us about another 20 hours.
What were your plans to do once the songs were all completed?
Well, give it to this promoter who, he just started promoting stuff around town and unfortunately did like a comedy thing first with some older comic and he lost a ton of money on it. And then he decided not to do it. So then we decided that, well, maybe we should just play out live. And Brad and I and Mark stayed together. And we got a couple other people to come in and started playing as Dick Tracy again.
Yeah, we were really lucky. We picked up a guy by the name of John Peterson who'd been around the Minneapolis music scene for a long time. Great bass player, real solid. Chaz Carlson, who had previously been out on tour with Melissa Manchester and some other local people. He was in Kane for a while, too. And they were both just great fits, just stepped right in and were perfect. Mark on vocals, and it was just really I don't think we skipped a beat, really, did we, John?
Not really. We just kept on playing, and we got a lot of notice because people hadn't seen Mark sing for a long time, and a lot of people were coming out and going, man, I remember you when I saw you at the Litter. You were incredible, blah, 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 you know, and mm-hmm. we all knew that. It's you know, someone with a world-class voice and I was lucky enough to play with two guys that I considered having world-class voices, both Mark and Dave Wagner. Those are the kind of guys that you can, as soon as you hear them sing one note, you know who it is. That's what I consider world-class.
Yeah, they're not your local guys covering stuff. They're somebody special, both those guys.
Is Dick Tracy doing the songs you recorded as Big City?
We're doing three. We're doing Whispered Dreams, Dirty Old Rock and Roll.
Occasionally we'd throw The Gambler in.
The Gambler. I think we did The Gambler more than anything else, actually.
Yeah.
Because we'd always get, somebody'd always go, I never heard this song before. Actually, they'd come up to Mark and go, it was really good. Who recorded it? And he'd go, well, we did. Mm-hmm. So
you maintained the Dick Tracy format of cover songs and added some originals.
Yes.
So now with Mark Gallagher and new players, does the whole sound of the band change?
Not really. Chaz was a really good keyboard player. He had played with a national group called Coujoie that had two albums on Warner Brothers and did the Melissa tour and a bunch of other things. So really seasoned players. I just kind of fit in, kind of, we're doing, the covers were fine. And as soon as we actually did one of Chaz's song called Dance in the Rain, too. Because he was interested in getting stuff. And, well, you know, when you have a voice like Mark, he was thinking, well, we could do something with this, you know. Mm-hmm. It was the same thing that we all thought.
Did you still try to get a record deal with Big City based on those songs you recorded?
Actually, after the promoter, he was also a rep for MCA and Mercury. After he kind of folded on it, we didn't really do anything with it. Because I really, at that point, we were, I don't know, too busy raising families and stuff anyways. It would be tough to do it. And that band went out on until, I would say, 91?
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, we just kind of tried to find a format that local audiences wanted to hear, doing a blend of cover materials and some of our originals on stage. I was actually a little surprised Mark was willing to hang around and doing it as long as he did. I think part of it was just like previous versions of the band, we developed this camaraderie and this feeling of family, and he really enjoyed it, and it wasn't threatening. Like when I came back in the band, I think he was feeling, when you retire and you come back and you're able to enjoy playing music again, or in his case, singing, with a bunch of guys you're that comfortable with, it's just so much fun. He was just having fun again, I think is really what it was.
I remember a funny thing. We were going down to Rochester to play, and Mark was with my girlfriend at the time, my present wife, Roanne. We were driving down there, and all of a sudden, we were laughing and joking and stuff, and all of a sudden, Mark, in his typical way, goes, I can't ride with you guys anymore. And I'm going, why, Mark? And he goes, because you're just too much fun.
Yeah, he is a unique guy. I remember one day after working with Mark for a while, he said, Brad, I don't think you and I should be as close as we've been anymore. I said, well, Mark, why is that? I don't know. You're just getting kind of weird. I don't understand you anymore. He was such a unique individual, and his the way he lived his life and the way he looked at life was just completely different from anybody I've ever known before. Working with the guy was one of the greatest experiences of my life. The stories that he used to tell me from playing rock and roll back in the old days with the litter and so forth. It kept me entertained on road trips, carpooling with the guy for a long time. I remember, I want to say one thing about working with the guy, and it goes back to the recording project. I accidentally walked into the booth with Denny behind the booth and John and Mark behind him talking, and Mark looked over and said, Brad laid down some really nice drum tracks. We better do a good job on this stuff. And I've received some nice compliments through the years. But that is probably the last thought that I'll have regarding my music career. That's the kindest compliment and the most important one I think I've ever received in my life coming from him.
John, how do you remember Mark Gallagher?
I remember most people were terrified of him for some reason. Well, he can kind of project his personality. Brian Dines, one of the guys that had worked with him in Archangel, once said that he could make me uncomfortable from the other room. You know, I kind of knew, I had worked with him, and we had always had this rapport because he liked my voice, he liked my guitar playing. I really didn't put up with much, I guess. So we really had a really good working relationship. He treated him like a normal guy. He would often come and ask me questions because he was very, well, he once asked me what I thought he might be able to get a job at Honeywell, and I told him, yeah, do it, you know. He goes, but they build bombs. And I said, they also build thermostats. You know, he was just, really...
He thought everything through. He wasn't willing to sacrifice his core beliefs in order to just get by in life, whether it was music or whether it was the other parts of his life, work or family or whatever. He had a very specific thought process, and he wasn't willing to compromise it.
Did you think of pressing the CD on your own?
Actually, there weren't CDs back then, or no way for us to actually put them. You're talking about the late 80s. CDs had just basically come out a few years before. So at that point, we just had cassettes.
Yeah, without a label willing to back it, really, there really wasn't anywhere to go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the recording known as Big City featuring Mark Gallagher was never released.
No, it wasn't. No, very few people have ever heard it.
Mm-hmm. But the ones who have loved it.
And Dick Tracy comes to an end at what time period?
Like 91. And then...
Do you remember the final gig with Dick Tracy?
Yes, we were playing in South Minnesota at this one place, and I don't remember the name mm-hmm. of it. But Mark's job had changed from daytimes to nighttime, so he had to leave. And, you know, everybody understood. And we just decided, okay. And then I still had a bunch of jobs booked. So I got a hold of Tom Baden, Jim Amundson, and Brad continued to play drums. And that's when we, it kind of morphed into a band called Legacy.
The preceding interview was recorded on February 13th, 2011 at Sunrise Sound in Rogers, Minnesota, and was produced by Danny Johnson and Tom Campbell.
Give me a nickel, and I'll make you a